Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Brian Smith of the Houston Chronicle was awesome earlier in the show, talking about what's going on in Houston. Harold Reynolds told great stories. Ryan Divish, Seattle Times, covers the Mariners, Major League Baseball, man of the world, joining us now. Good follow on Twitter, by the way. Divish joining us. What are you doing right now, Ryan Divish, besides this call?
I just got a large bucket of range balls. I'm on a forced vacation burn. Our collective bargaining agreement between our union and our paper, which wasn't my favorite, we gave up some vacation accrual, and so I'm going to lose. I have 85 hours of vacation to burn before the possible start of spring training, or I'm going to lose them. So while baseball is going on and there's plenty of news to write about, I am not allowed to work. So talking to you guys is actually the best part of my day.
Let's get it all out. You've got time on your hands, but we just talked to Harold Reynolds, who's saying he's pretty confident about July 4th. He thinks that like a 2-week spring training in front of that. You think that's enough time?
Yeah, I think that for me, they have to decide it by June 3rd. They have to reach an agreement by June 3rd or 4th, because to implement all the stuff that's going on, you know, scheduling, spring training, all this stuff. Obviously, teams are preparing like they're going to have a season. They're doing all this stuff. But there's a lot of logistics. And simply just getting players to spring training sites and stuff like that would take time. And if they want to have a spring training on June 10th, which is their original plan, then they need to know by, like, June 3rd. You know, a lot of people say June 1st, but I think June 3rd would be a drop-dead date. And as of today, it feels like they can't be farther apart on a deal than when they started. So it's going to be interesting.
What has to give there? Because I get, like, the owners want to play. The owners have to fulfill their, they want that television revenue. They want to fulfill those obligations. What are the players after? Is it just revenue, or what are they chasing?
You know, the players, I think, there's just such a distrust between the MLB players and the MLB owners. And it's from years and years of, you know, labor battles and what they feel like, you know, things like service time manipulation and, you know, collusion at times. And, you know, there's a distrust from the owners with players when they had all the steroid use and all that stuff, which I think some owners turned a blind eye to because they knew that they were getting stuff back. So it's really odd how this has all kind of played out. And I kind of tweeted this out today on a series of tweets, but the owners are trying to win this. And I don't think that you should be trying to win negotiations when you're negotiating during a pandemic. I think that you should be doing as much as possible to meet halfway and get something done. Nobody wants to hear about billionaires and millionaires arguing over money in good times. And these are far from good times, with a 30% unemployment rate and people living paycheck to paycheck or not even having a paycheck. I don't think that, you know, that concept bodes well for the optics of baseball. And I think, you know, the owners have played the game like they're negotiating a normal CBA during good times. You know, they float the 50-50 revenue split, which is the equivalent of a salary cap, knowing that the players would react poorly to it, and they did. So then they come back with this sliding scale, which by nature will take and divide the union, with the 60% of players that make $1 million or less being unhappy with the, you know, the small percentages of the Mike Trouts and the guys making $20 million a year. They're dividing the union that way. They also know that the players will react poorly to that. And so while the owners give the perception like they're trying to make this work by offering two low-ball deals, the players come off looking greedy because they won't accept any of this. And the players don't have the discipline to not tweet about it in the first place, or be Blake Snell and, you know, get on Twitch at 3 a.m. while playing video games to complain about it. These are all things that are not disciplined. You know, you haven't seen any owners come out and say anything. They've showed a united front, which I don't think there necessarily is, but they haven't. And so the whole thing looks terrible. Like, if you're the owners, don't lowball the situation. Don't try and win this negotiation. Come out, be a little bit more reasonable to what the players want, which is the prorated deal they agreed upon. Look, if the owners came out and said, I'll give you, we're asking for 10% reduction of the prorated salaries we promised you and the ability to defer payment on the top-level contracts for the next 2 years, you know, and space out the payment we have to pay for the next 2 years to somebody only making $20 million, I think the players would have signed it and agreed to it. But because they come out and offer such ridiculously low offers, the players are forced to say no to it. And then the players come off looking greedy for whatever reason. I think you've seen this before. There is a psychological kind of a psychosis of some fans to automatically go against the players in this situation, I think, because of an inherent jealousy that players are doing something that they feel like they would do for free.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people are sitting around going, look, I took a pay cut, or I took a furlough, or I, you know, and there are a lot of, like, you know, even yourself, you talked about the collective bargaining agreement and the fact that you're not working right now. You're burning vacation time because you're going to lose it. And so I think it's not relatable. And it's true. Like, my dad told me a long time ago, Ryan, like, it takes no brains to propose a deal that is one-sided. Like, the owners knew that, right? Why do they do that?
They're playing the game, the perception. You know, Rob Manfred is very shrewd. You know, when the players got all their power in the union and stuff back in the day from the work stoppages, and so Donald Fair was the guy that did it. And at that time, the owner, or Larry Stone and I were just talking about this on the phone, but what the players did back then was let Donald Fear handle all the things that were said, and then they sat back and watched the owners argue with each other over what was best for them. You know, because at that time, the owners were not a united front. But now, like, Manfred has united the owners. At least they present a unified front on this. You don't see them talking, while the players have all this social media that just gets them in trouble. Every time they come out there and tweet about this stuff, it has negative effects. So I think I just don't know what the owners are trying to gain in all of this. But again, the CBA expires after the 2021 season. So, you know, this could be manipulation for what was already expected to be really contentious negotiations after the 2021 season, you know, and the owners, and there's just such a distrust between both sides. I mean, I have a hard time taking the side of the billionaires on this, because I know the complete lack of transparency that these owners have when it comes to the money they're making on local television rights and revenues, you know, some of these things, some of the ways they manipulate the system. I mean, you don't get to be billionaires not knowing how to make money on situations. And also, the value of a franchise is over $1 billion. If the Miami Marlins sold for $1.2 billion, or the Royals just sold for $1.1 billion when the previous owner bought them for $96 million, think about the inflation or the rise in costs. I mean, if they're worth $1.1 billion, if the Royals are worth that, what are the Mariners worth? They have a pristine ballpark. They have low payroll. They own their own regional sports network. I mean, the value of what the Mariners are worth, you know, probably $5 billion, if not more, because of that network alone.
Ryan Divish, Seattle Times, with us. I had a lot of people in Portland asking that, you know, does the potential need for a cash infusion increase the timeline on expansion? Does that accelerate possible expansion, or are there so many bigger issues, Ryan, that Rob Manfred can't even get to that?
I don't know if he can get to it, and I don't know. You know, I think there is some, you know, it's like with the NBA and expansion, there are some owners that don't want to share with another team. They don't want to add another two teams to cut into the revenue sharing that they already have, you know, and especially teams like probably the Marlins, the Royals, the A's. I mean, they rely on the revenue sharing from all teams to really, you know, have success. I don't know that they want that. I mean, there is a demand for baseball. Well, there was, we'll see after this, but I don't know that it's a priority, you know. And honestly, I know I've said this before, but I think the Mariners would fight Portland getting their team. They would try hard for that not to happen because they feel like, you know, Oregon is part of their regional footprint. I don't know that would happen that way. I don't know that MLB would listen, but I know that they would probably fight it. Because while they say all the things on the record that they're all in support of Portland, having a team in their mind, no, that would be detrimental to them.
Ryan Divish, Seattle Times, our guest. Let's talk about some possible good things that could come from a shortened season. If they play 82 games, I think we'd be looking at Harold Reynolds talked about a destination World Series that could be fun. Every game would matter, would be fun. Do you agree with those things, or do you see other things that are attractive to players and fans?
I think an 82-game season, it does put an emphasis on playing well early, and even these teams that are typical or that are in rebuild mode, like the Mariners, you could get hot and somehow make it, especially with an expanded playoff. You know, they're adding four teams to the playoffs, going from 10 teams to 14 teams. So, again, that raises the opportunity as well. Would it be viewed as an asterisk maybe to make the playoffs in an 82-game season? Of course, I think it would be. But, you know, there are that aspect. And, again, I think what we saw with the match the other day and stuff, I think teams could be very creative in the TV packages that they're providing to fans. I mean, that's how you're going to be watching this. You know, they should come up with creative ways to engage with fans via the television broadcast. So I think, you know, in that way, you could bring them closer as well. I mean, there are ways, baseball teams pay guys a lot of money to market their teams. You know, the Mariners have one of the best marketing divisions in all of baseball. They sold a product that hasn't been very good for a lot of years and still managed to, you know, put people in the stands and do well. You know, this is the challenge now. Find ways to make this better for your fans, grow the game. You know, and do that. I don't know, though, but you have to have games. That's the problem. Like, you have to have games. Everything that MLB has done so far has just been kind of head-scratching. They're going to use this pandemic to push across an agenda. They're only going to use it to cut minor league baseball, that they were going to do anyways, but they're going to use this excuse that these teams don't have money to handle full minor league systems, so they're going to cut 40 teams out of minor league baseball. My home state of Montana will not have professional baseball. And, you know, all these things that Rob Manfred has wanted to do to change the game to benefit owners, he's probably going to find a way to make it work and using the circumstance of a global pandemic to help him do it, which is pretty kind of disgusting on a lot of levels.
Ryan Divish, Seattle Times. Hit those golf balls straight, man. I appreciate you making time for us.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, they won't go straight, but that's, yeah, so it's better than... beer and rain balls is still probably better than sitting around and being in MLBPA negotiations, that's for certain.
Well, when they play, I'm curious, when they play the games, let's just say they do what the NBA is doing and they pick, it's all going to be held in Arizona. What's the press box going to look like? How will you cover games?
Yeah, I was talking to some people with the Mariners, and they were like, if they did it at Safeco, they would have, it's got a big press box. We each have our own section. And then if there was like a larger media contingent, they would move people into the suites. So I already called dibs on the press box suite that they have with the full bar and everything. So,
it's going to be the greatest thing ever.
One reporter per outlet and, you know, the limit access. And if you do interviews, people will stand 20 feet away, all podium stuff, everything like that. Which, I mean, like, as you know as well, that's where we're going. In all of this, like the days of open locker rooms and clubhouses, I think are gone.
Yeah. Speaking of that, I think this is another, you know, I think the NBA was already interested in pushing reporters out of the locker room. Now they've got, you know, some justification for it. And to your point, I think everybody's going to use this for their own agenda. I appreciate you.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks, Ryan.
All right, man. Take it easy.
All right. Yep. There's Ryan Divish, Seattle Times. Good stuff from him. I think it's fascinating to get the different perspectives and to sort of hear the enthusiasm and the discouragement. Really, like, you know, on today's show alone, we have heard from Brian Smith of the Houston Chronicle, who's talking about, you know, why is the NBA doing this? Well, the NBA is interested in the idea of playing the games because they want to satisfy their television contract, their obligation from the 2019-2020 season. They don't want to give money back. Major League Baseball, looking at the same thing. All right, how do we get our TV games in? And by the way, what other things that we wanted to address in the collective bargaining agreement can we address here? Daniel is in Clackamas and has called in. Daniel, what's up, man?
Hey, John. Hey, I just have been thinking about this, and I thought initially when I heard one of the players put out his money not coming, you know, I thought initially, oh, wow, that's you know, tough to take being furloughed, you know, myself for a couple weeks being tight on money. But what I thought deeper is the owners can't play the game of baseball, but they can play the game of negotiations, and they can win.
Yep.
And they can also set themselves up for 2021. So I think that that's where it's going to come down to, is one side or the other, the owners or the players willing to concede in negotiating.
Yeah, and the owners know how to play this game a little better, don't they?
Well, that's their game. The players play baseball. Yep. Owners got rich billionaires playing business, negotiating good deals.
Yeah, the owners are not in this to say, hey, look, you know, I really love the game. I'd love for the players to get rich. I'm okay breaking even. That's not what the owners are about. That's not how they became owners in the first place, which is a great point by Daniel and Clackamas. So when you look at this negotiation between the Players Association and the owners, it's a mismatch. Like, literally, the players are doing a lot of talking out of school. If you're on social media, you're going to hear from players who are going to say, I don't want to do this. And the owners are just, they're like this unified, galvanized bunch. And they got Rob Manfred, whose job as Commissioner of Major League Baseball, by the way, is to serve owners. They're his bosses. It's like Larry Scott in the Pac-12. He's got 12 bosses. Never mind the coaches, never mind the fans. It's the 12 bosses. That's why he talks about being collaborative. He's being collaborative with his 12 bosses. It's not really collaboration. You got the BFT around the water cooler next. Ahead. 2 o'clock hour's been on fire for the last 10 weeks. People who are around this show know what I'm talking about. The energy of the 2 o'clock hour has just been exceptional. I'm going to say that before my wife comes in studio because I don't want her to be like, oh yeah, I'm in the 2 o'clock hour every day. She's a part of it. She joins us at 2:30 every day to talk about stuff. And we will do that at 2:30. But every day in this segment, we talk about what people are talking about around the water cooler. We become that thing.
Welcome to the Culligan Water Cooler Report. If we're talking about it, they'll be talking about it. Brought to you by Culligan Water Company.
All right. I saw where Dr. Fauci, the foremost authority on health in this country during this time, he is imploring you to wear your mask when in public. And health officials say that you have 50% more prevention when you are wearing a mask. So here's my question. I'm in the store yesterday. I got my mask on in part because I care about your health. My wife is also with me. She has her mask on. And if I didn't have my mask on, she'd have been all over me saying, why are you wearing a mask? You need to wear your mask. Well, as I walked around, I kind of noticed about half the people in the store that I was in did not have a mask on. There was a lot of looking at each other. I don't know if they're judging me and going, oh, look at you wearing a mask. What are you worried about? We have low infections here in our portion of the country. Or I don't know if they're feeling guilty and judged. But I'm looking at them and I'm going, hey, I'm wearing a mask. I'm trying to protect people around me. So for crying out loud, put something over your face. I don't care if it's a scarf that you have. I don't care if it's homemade, whatever that thing may be. Put it on your face. Alabama Adriana, what is this about when people won't wear a mask?
You're asking the wrong person because I've noticed the same thing. Everybody that doesn't wear one kind of gives you that look like,
yes.
Oh, yeah, like we're being too overprotective or something. But no, I don't get it.
I don't get it. Put on a mask. I am judging you if you don't have a mask on. If that's not enough, then let your conscience be your guide. It could be something.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Beach.
Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but
If you want to listen to more of the Bald Faced Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Faced Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.